Always Evolving is brought to you by Cast Centers, which is a company and organization very close to me. I founded Cast Centers over 17 years ago. We provide the best evidence-based practices for therapy, mental health, addiction. Anytime you're struggling or you have a loved one who is struggling, make sure you go to our website at www.castcenters.com. C-A-S-T centers.com. Give us a call. We're here to help. We'll help you with a free assessment, and let's get your mental health on track. Going to have a conversation with someone today who is in my last book, One Decision, The First Step to a Better Life, which that book was all about helping people make one decision towards a better life. And if you read that book, then if you went to page 101, which we talked about fortune telling and or fact finding, you'll hear Mike Piastantino's story, also known as Coach Quads on Instagram, because his quads are enormous. You have huge quads.
Thank you.
But the reason I'm having you join me today is not because of you being in One Decision, the book, but more I thought that it's pretty inspiring that you've created a hobby and passion for yourself later in life, which is now doing stand-up comedy.
Yes. It was something that was very terrifying initially, but I started writing jokes just because I just had these ideas, and I've always been creative. I do, you know, visual arts and stuff like that. So I was just like, oh, let me write down these ideas. Maybe they'll turn into something somewhere down the line. And then I started to follow a lot of comedians and listen to a lot of comedy podcasts. And I was like, hey, I should try this. And the funny thing was, I had a handful of friends that are like successful comics. Like, they were just friends in my life from different places outside of comedy. And they were all just like, yeah, just go and do it. So I just decided one day to start doing it. And it was the most terrifying thing I think I've ever done.
Really?
I've never had more of the feeling of a panic attack than when I first started doing comedy.
You mean the first time you went on stage?
The first 50 times, probably. Like, it doesn't go away for a while.
Right.
Till you get like this level of comfort. And then, but that was almost what stimulated me to want to keep doing it. Like, I had to overcome this thing. And for me, so much of things in my life that I choose to do and all that are all about personal growth. Mm. So realizing that it was that terrifying made me realize it was something I had to learn how to do, learn how to overcome this feeling. Because for me, like, my backstory, like so much of my professional world as a trainer was
personal trainer.
Personal trainer, yeah, is wrapped up in body.
And how long have you been a personal trainer?
Since 1996.
Don't you get sick of it?
And actually, I don't. It's a weird thing. I don't know why or how. There have been times in my career that I've had like low points, but those are usually my personal low points. And that's why I'm, you know what I mean? I'm having issues with life in general. So work being just one part of that. But when things are going good, like, I love it. It's great.
Hmm.
It's such a great and rewarding job, especially because I have such a wide range of clients. I have everything from people getting ready for a competition all the way to someone that's just post-surgery and I'm rehabbing them because, you know, they've had a knee injury or a back injury or something like that.
So what would be the, what you've seen is in your, gosh, over 25 years of why certain people achieve their goals that they come to you with and why some don't?
Wow. I mean, it all comes back to mindset. The place they're at, the place they think they can get to. And it's no different than comedy, like pursuing comedy. It's this belief that you can't do it. And if you stick with that belief, you'll fulfill that belief.
Mm-hmm.
You'll figure out a way to derail yourself to go, oh, see, I was right. I can't stick to this diet. I can't continue doing this.
Right.
I'm just this person that doesn't exercise.
Yeah, I see that a lot. I see that often even with people in their jobs where they'll say, you know, I've spent 20 years doing this. I'm just a blank. It's almost like, there's thousands of other opportunities to take your skill set, but people are committed to the story that they just can't change or they just can't get well. And part of it, your passion for getting into comedy. And before that, your hobby was more art, right?
Yeah. Creating art. Yeah. Yep.
So you've always had hobbies while being a trainer.
No, but eventually, yes. Because I was
at least since I've known you.
As long as I've known you, yes. But prior to that, when I first moved to LA, there was a period of time for like probably from college all the way through to living here about 10 years where I was so lacking creatively and I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I think that was part of my displeasure with life, if you will, you know, that I just didn't have anything that I was passionate about, you know. So getting back into art kind of fueled that. And then I started doing other things creatively, and then I got into the comedy. So the creative stuff really fuels my day-to-day, and it just kind of, to sound corny, makes me more, like, excited about life.
Sure.
Because I have these things that I'm doing, and you can see them, you know, you start with an idea, and then you build it and grow it, and, you know, and it becomes this whole bigger thing.
Hobbies and passions are so important, especially when they push us out of our comfort zone. It's so easy to choose hobbies. Watching TV is not a hobby. Going to movies is not a hobby.
Yes, food. People go, food. I love food. I go to dinner. I'm like, yeah, so everybody goes to dinner.
Yeah, like, because I'm single right now. I've been on some dating sites, and one of the things that people say they love to do is go to movies. And I'm like, I could do that by myself. Like,
right.
Whatever. It's not that exciting or interesting that is your hobby.
Yeah.
Watching Netflix
and
going to movies
is
not very attractive to me.
Right. Well, and our friendship has actually been based in more activities. Like, we go to art shows.
Yeah.
We've gone to, you know, a bunch of different things.
I don't think we've ever gone to movies together.
No. I don't.
I don't think we've ever watched TV together besides fights, maybe.
Just fights. I think that's it. Yeah. There would be no reason to.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of these crime, unsolved mysteries, serial killer shows lately at night. Mm. I was so spooked the other night that I checked every room in the house before I went to sleep. You know, I brought my dog with me, Vita, to like explore.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, my dog will bark at people when they come, but she's kind of lazy. And what if someone's really smooth?
Right.
Because you realize how crazy some people are out there.
Sure. And those shows make you realize how dark people get and how messed up people's lives have been, maybe from their childhood, and that's why they're so like that, or just how deranged people can become and do horrible things. Yeah, you're just like, wow.
I watched an episode last night about a guy in Arizona, or two guys, and they would literally just, they called it, oh my gosh, I can't come up with a name, but they would drive around and just shoot people.
Mm.
And they would shoot people every few weeks or so.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And it was a hobby for them. Like, it was like a sport.
Wow.
And it just was so crazy to me that someone would actually go around and shoot strangers.
Yeah.
So then what I did is I locked up my house as much as possible, even though I'm like pretty private. And you did not grow up where you had these passions. You grew up in Philadelphia, and kind of in a macho environment.
Yeah.
I wonder why the East Coast kind of has more of that. In California, there's no what a man is. yeah. so to speak.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is more.
I think it's just old embedded culture from the time when people came here as immigrants and you were literally fighting tooth and nail to survive. And, you know, it was all about just working hard. You don't have to love what you do. You have to make money to provide for your family. Because we came here from, you know, my family from Italy, you know, we came here and you got to make it happen in this new place. And then I think, you know, that idea of providing then gets wrapped up into gender and, you know, that's what a man does. And a man is just tough, but you don't have time for emotions because he's got to be doing in order to be worth anything. So then your worth gets wrapped up in. I mean, I'm a great example of it. I mean, I'm muscular. Like, I've trained my whole life to look like this man prototype.
Right.
You know, because my early environment dictated that. This is, and I was an art kid in like junior high school and grade school and got ridiculed left and right from family, friend. You know what I mean?
Like, for creating art.
Oh, yeah. 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 It was horrible.
What was acceptable?
Sports, being tough. It was probably more acceptable to be a thug than it was an artist.
Huh.
Like, hey, kid's tough.
Right.
He doesn't take any crap. You know what I mean? Or
yeah.
And you're just like, oh, yeah.
It's so silly.
Right, right. But again, it's all just, I think it's just a culture. And I always use the example, it's also Italian. If you look at the Jersey Shore, that show, people are like, oh, this is so crazy. And I go, no. They're just following the rules. The rules are you look a certain way, man right. looks a certain way, woman looks a certain way. Behavior is acceptable or unacceptable. What behavior is acceptable? Fighting each other, totally acceptable. Being weak, not acceptable at all. Being sad, not acceptable. You know what I mean? So it's like, and even you'll see the women on the show physically fighting each other. Totally acceptable. Hey, yeah, she pissed her off. What are you going to do? You know? So it's like, and then if you look at different groups, there's a different set of rules. You know, I live in Los Angeles now and I train a lot of people in Beverly Hills. Like there's a whole different set of rules in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And if anything, like looking like me is not okay to be super fit and big or whatever. They're just like, why would you do that?
In like, Beverly almost, Hills, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there is lifting so much at the gym is as popular in Beverly Hills as it may be in downtown Philadelphia.
No.
Right.
It's more fitness than it is
weight it's more training. Feeling good, looking in. Yeah.
And the weight training in Philadelphia is, again, back to this machismo culture of the gym.
So you started doing stand-up comedy how long ago?
About 4 years ago.
Did you take classes to get into it?
No. No, it's one of those things like, and again, I'm fortunate that I had friends that knew it. They're like, you just go do it.
How old are you, Mike?
I am 49. I just turned 49.
You start doing this at 45. You were like, yes. I need to do this. Yes. I had this strong urge. Yes. But the urge had to be more than just facing fear because there's 1,000 ways to face fear.
Well, no, I mean, of course, I'm the guy in a conversation. I always like to make the joke. You know, I just like to make people laugh. And if we even go further back. So that comes from growing up in a family with almost no joy. No one was ever happy. So I think part of what I started to do was trying be funny. Like, let's break this tension. So I just got used to trying to make light of everything. Hey, let's not think everything is so heavy and difficult all the time. Why don't we just laugh a little bit? Life's not that bad. Like, even if it's bad, it's still not that bad. You can find joy. You can find, you know, happiness in moments and times and stuff like that. So I think that was part of it, you know, that I always enjoyed doing that.
Right.
And then this was just an extension of that.
And so you came up with an act and it kind of, and it's a hobby where for a long time you don't make any money. So you get in front of people and the goal is to entertain so that people walk away from it feeling either an escape or feeling better or having the ability to laugh.
Yeah.
And that can be very difficult.
Yes.
Because some people, just, it's almost as if it's, okay, now perform.
Mm.
Or they're used to going to comedy shows. So there's different levels in mm-hmm. terms of how someone can carry a stage in a moment. But the first time you did it, how long before did you know you were going to do stand-up? Like go on stage?
Honestly, I probably had written jokes for 2 years prior to starting. I was just writing stuff down like, oh, this is funny. This is a funny prep. And I didn't know whether I was going to make them into like Instagram videos or do start doing skits at some point or what. I just, again, I was like, that's a good idea. Let me document it in my notes. And I just had a comedy note page in my notes section.
So when you first performed, though, was it for five people who were all performing as well?
Yeah, yeah. So it's in an open mic room. It's, you know, other comics. Everyone's there to do comedy. No one's there to see comedy. Uh-huh. So you're trying to make a group of people laugh that really aren't interested in laughing. They're interested in making you laugh. So it's an even harder.
They may not even be paying attention.
Yeah. Sometimes people are just on their phones, you know, which is rude. You shouldn't do that. But anyway.
So the first time you attempt it, how mm-hmm. long is your set?
My set is 5 minutes. But I probably only got through 3.5 minutes.
Because?
I just blanked. Literally, just my mind went blank. And I could not think of even what I was just talking about or what I was going to say next.
You went into fight or flight.
Yeah. And once that panic, like that whole body sensation of panic, where you can almost feel it into the hair follicles on top of your head. And I was just like, ah. And I was like, okay, that's all I have. And thank you. And then I just walked off. And people laughed throughout, like it wasn't unfunny, but I just was so nervous. I mean, I remember a couple times after that, just sitting in the audience going, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Just go home. Mm. Like feeling just this anxiety and stress. And I'm like, why am I doing? And I did it and it was fine, you know, and you survive and you learn and you grow and, you know, so.
But at first, did you love it or no?
It's exhilarating regardless of how it goes. So even when it goes bad, there's like this endorphin rush. And then when it starts to go better, it's an even different, better endorphin rush.
So you go from first, how many times did you perform with the other people in the room who are also doing comedy and there's no real audience that's just coming to see a comedy show?
I mean, that's all the time. And still, I mean, those are the mics where you're practicing.
Do you pay to get on mic?
Yeah. So there's a whole system in LA and I think they do it other places too.
How much does it cost to get on a mic?
It's $5 for 5 minutes.
You know, people who do karaoke don't have to pay. They should have to pay too. Cause some of them are just,
but they're selling drinks. So you're in the bar to drink and this is the thing to get you in the bar.
This isn't the bar.
So that's why often a comedy show is free. Here's for free tickets. Come see the comedy show. We want to get you in the door. We want you to buy something to eat. We want you to buy some drinks. That's why most comedy clubs are a 2-drink minimum. You're paying for 2 drinks to see the show. You're not paying for the show, but you kind of are paying for the show.
But you pay, how much does it cost to perform, to practice?
It's usually $5 for 5 minutes, $8 for 10 minutes if you're doing
it cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap. That's what I'm saying. There's the barrier to entry to do the mics, especially for me as someone who's married with a kid, a full-time day job. It was the perfect timing for this style of open mic because I could schedule something at a specific time when I was available and could do it. I could pay the $5, which was I'm fine with. And do the thing that I wanted to do and not have to sit in a club for 4 hours with my name in a bucket and maybe not get picked.
Right.
Like I just sat here, you know, an entire night away from my family.
Where did they do this in LA?
Well, I mean, I go a lot to the Fourth Wall. They kind of started this whole format of, you know, the pay for the mic time. Joe Manente, who's been great to me and, you know, super supportive and has put me on a bunch of shows and stuff. So it started there and then other places kind of picked up the model. So it's literally, there's probably more than a dozen places like this. So
how often do you do it?
I do it usually like 2 times a week and get out like 2 days of the week. And then I do like a writer's group with some of my peers, I guess. And we, you know, kick around ideas. And
where does this go? Because I have to imagine it's, there's very few comedians that command, you know, it's almost,
yeah,
you need a huge platform or doing it for a while, or is it more, do a lot of people do this to fulfill that passion in their life, or because they're making, wanting to make a career out of it?
I mean, in my experience, it's usually one or the other. People are doing it for the art of it.
Right.
And then some people are doing it because they want to be famous. And usually those people will mention at some point in their set wanting to become famous.
They will.
Yeah. 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 Like, it's so obvious that you're just like, well, you're not, you know, sometimes it's like, well, you're not even doing comedy. You're just talking about how you want to be famous. Like, be funny and that'll make you famous.
I think it's such a weird concept to want to be famous.
Well, I think people, it's people have a perception of what it is.
Yeah.
And then there's the reality of what it is.
Yeah, like, I don't want to be famous.
Yeah.
It's, hobby-wise, I create some animation cartoons that mm-hmm. That was like shit I wish I knew as a kid.
Right.
And hired, you know, like, it's my first one, so I'm going to put it on my, like, Instagram and Facebook, but it's, they're animated videos because I don't want to have to always be Coach Mike.
Yeah.
I want to have creative outlets.
Yep.
To do it. And then... but that what I found is it takes a level of narcissism to really want to be famous, because what you're saying is you want to be relevant, and to be relevant is doing what people want you to do. So at a certain point, you can act out, you can be crazy, you can be controversial, but then if you create that image, you have to consistently be controversial. Otherwise, you're no longer relevant.
Yeah.
And even people that are iconic still chase relevance.
Yeah.
And it seems exhausting to me.
Yeah, and I do think that's the beauty of stand-up comedy in a way, because the ones that are really good are really honest and themselves and pure. And it's not about chasing the thing. There's like, no, here's what I have to say.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not. And you're seeing a lot of that in the world right now, like the backlash and the cancel culture and all that. Like, nope, I said it because I thought it was funny.
So now
you may disagree.
Because for a while, people were getting canceled who were comedians for saying things even from 15 years ago, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
And is that still happening as much now?
I think it's calmed down a bit.
Yeah.
But I still think everybody is kind of chomping at the bit to cancel somebody.
Yeah.
It's just a weird time where everyone just wants to go, see, they're not a good person.
Yeah, I think passion and finding hobbies is so important that are outside of, like, you know, I do jiu-jitsu. I'm supposed to do a tournament this weekend in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, who worked with me for a while, is going out to videotape it. And I'm flying out my professor. And I ended up throwing out my back on Saturday. Mm. And it had been maybe 4, 5, 6 months since I've thrown out my back. And I, of course, like an addict, did cupping and acupuncture and massage
right.
and stretching
Fix it.
And jacuzzi and doing everything I can in my power because I really want to compete this weekend.
Sure.
It's my first tournament as a blue belt. It's pushing myself,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's 1,000 reasons not to do it. One of those, obviously, if I'm so injured, I shouldn't do it. But then it's easy also to allow fear to convince that the injury is horrible. You know, I'm sure people do jiu-jitsu tournaments all the time and have injuries.
Yep.
And at what point is it, okay, this is healthy versus unhealthy? But again, it's a hobby I invest in. I'm never going to be a famous jiu-jitsu fighter. Like, I'm right. 40, turning 43 in September. But it's pushing self to get out of comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Because getting out of comfort zone as we get older and realizing that we can do so much more or try so many different things.
Yeah.
And I often work with a lot of people who won't get out of their comfort zone. They will stay comfortable. They'll even start to say they don't like people, you know, that they have their group of friends, they have their routine, they have their structure. But sometimes people don't want to get out of their comfort zone because it's hard, because you could be rejected.
Right.
And I think that's, as I've gotten older, I've realized how important it is to push ourselves
yeah.
to do things that initially we will suck at. Mm-hmm. Like my animated video, which I'll show you after this, it's called The Cloud. It's basically about how self-judgment comes from self. Like, it's really irrelevant what other people think of us. Now, if we're trying to be famous, it does matter what people think about us. But if we're just trying to live our life, it doesn't matter. As long as there's no consequences, like suddenly we can't afford to live.
Right.
And so it's kind of the story that I created when I was going through my breakup. And I was on a date, actually, with someone. And I said, hey, what do you want to do? And he was like, oh, I don't know. What do you want to do? I was like, let's write. And I turned on music and we both wrote stories. So this is one of the stories that I wrote.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That came out of it.
Yeah.
But it's many times in this process of even creating the animation, it's like, Mike, what are you doing?
Yeah.
This isn't that good.
It's that doubt.
God, you're actually putting, is this too depressing? Are you putting out there the wrong image? But really, when you just do, when you achieve things that you're proud of, it gives you the experience. So like doing stand-up comedy doesn't only give you the experience of doing stand-up comedy, it gives you the experience of working as a part of a creative team. It gets you the experience of how to be respectful. Mm-hmm. Gets you the experience of, if you speak in public, how to move emotion.
Yeah.
It probably even teaches you different ways to be a parent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it has all these values. And if the only value was, I want to do comedy because I want to be famous, mm-hmm. or I want to just make a career out of this, you miss all these other things that bring you joy.
Yeah. And then you're just chasing the thing that you think will make you famous, and you're not authentic to yourself, and you're often not growing and doing those things that you just mentioned because you're so caught up in what will get me popular. Yeah. I'll be that.
And it's impossible to grow without at some point feeling like you suck.
Oh, yeah. I still do. Even when I've done well.
What was the experience you had looking back that still makes you uneasy with your stomach, where you're like, oof?
It's weird. I have this weird ability to let things go.
That's a good ability.
Yeah. It's and something about me in my entire life, since I probably started weight training, like, I'm really good at choosing discomfort. Like, it's become like a skill where I'm okay completely uncomfortable. Mm. So even when it's going horrible, I'm just analytical about it. Why is it going horrible? What did I do that, you know, why was that not funny? Why did I bomb?
But then what is the actual fear then doing it?
For me, initially, it was so wrapped up in my physical appearance, because I have body dysmorphia. So I'm so conscious, or have so much thought wrapped up in what I look like and how people perceive me physically, that just being up in front of people and having a room full of people just looking right at me.
What do you mean body dysmorphia?
So body dysmorphia is where, you know, when you look in the mirror, you see something different than actually appears in reality. So you have these things that you hyper-focus on, and, you know, you want to change and you want to make better. And
so you think everyone was staring at a part of your body, or
or they judging me, that they think I'm, you know, do they think I'm a meathead? Do they think I'm, you know, I'm talking about working out? Do I not look like I work out enough for what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like, it's all this judgment stuff, which we could backtrack to my childhood and, you know, understand the origin story of that. But that's also, I think, what drives me to do it. In a weird way, I fear that, but I also am comfortable with the judgment, and it's familiar.
So at first the fear was body dysmorphia, everyone staring at you while you're up there and they're judging your body. Mm-hmm. Then what did it become?
Well, then once you get past that, once I got past that, then it becomes like, is this funny? am I doing this endeavor well? And how do I figure out how to do it better when it fails or when something doesn't get a reaction, or even just learning how to riff off of when something fails? You know, it's all just skill based.
Did you have a joke that just never landed that you thought, gosh, this is really funny?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Yeah, I'm sure I have.
And then you just scratch it, or do you go, no, probably, I think it's funny.
Yeah. There have been stuff that I scratched because I felt like it was a funny joke.
For if you lived your life.
No, it was a funny joke, but it really wasn't my joke in a way. It was a funny concept, maybe like an observation or something, but it really didn't match who I am. So it could never land because it wasn't believable from me. And that's the other thing with the authenticity. The more authentic you are, then the more believable it is. They're like, oh, that's that guy. Right. Like, I understand who this person is. And then they can laugh with you because they go, oh, I get it. Whereas someone, when you're not sure who they are, you're just like, well, what? Should I laugh at that? Should I not laugh at that?
I find I have an easier time laughing when there's not someone hysterically laughing next to me, unless it's funny because they're hysterically laughing. So I went to one of your comedy shows, and there was a guy, him and his buddy rolled in late, clearly stoned. Hmm. And one of them was laughing before there was even the joke dropping.
Right.
Like, ah! To the point where I started recording him with my phone, and I would send it to my friend. Fred went with me. And it's kind of, you know, because people show up to laugh, but you get some people that are cackling.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I guess you call those people out sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it's going to be funny to call them out, then you call them out, you know?
Yeah.
Or reference it or, you know.
So do people ever come up to comedians afterwards and go, I was insulted by that joke?
It happens all
or
the time.
Or that's not that environment.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it happen, but I've never had it. Because my stuff is usually so personal,
yeah,
that I'm, if anything, I'm making fun of myself,
right,
and my experience, and that's where some of the jokes that I maybe have tried that I was just like, oh, I can't, I'm not gonna do that joke, because it was like either making fun of something or, you know what I mean, it wasn't true to my general
who you are,
I am, and what kind of my story is.
What would be
is.
Your dream of where this could all go?
Wow. It's funny. I'm so skill oriented that I focus more on being really good. I don't think of the outcome. And that's been part of my problem in life in general. And you helped me with that. And that's why I'm in the book, because we did that exercise about money and you know, worth and all that sort of stuff.
And you started charging more, getting more.
Yeah, and I'm making more money for the same amount of work. And, you know, I'm financially more secure and stable and happy. And, you know, there's way less stress in my life.
Right.
So thank you so much for that, because it literally has changed my life. And so to a fault, I don't focus on the outcome, whether it be financial or success. Uh-huh. I always focus on the skill. And it's probably something I need to change in this endeavor as well.
Well, I think sometimes it's helpful to envision where we want it all to go. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is just kind of the energy and not so much. I'll come across people that will say, I want to win an Oscar.
Mm.
And I'm like, I've heard that a lot in Los Angeles.
Okay.
You know, really, it's so important. A trophy.
Sure.
A trophy.
Yeah.
A trophy that everyone sees you got a trophy. And then next year, there's a new trophy for someone else. But I think it's helpful to envision lifestyle experiences and everything that can come as doing something that you're really passionate about. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean outcome in the sense of I'm going to go perform in front of, you know, 5,000 people.
Right.
It's outcome in the sense of, gosh, I would really love to collaborate with people, and I would love my comedy to be able, and what I write, maybe I can partner on a show and I write something, or maybe I'm able to blank, blank, blank. And just, I think that the more we start to think that way, mm-hmm. the more we plant seeds in life and the more we're able to connect dots.
Right.
Because we have a little bit of a vision.
Yeah.
And then we kind of know what's in alignment and what opportunities are there. So
yeah.
I think it's helpful to think, gosh, it would be pretty cool to collaborate on blank, or, you know, I want to be able to have the experience where, you know, I'm doing comedy and people are bringing this joy or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Or not. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but I think if we want to grow something, I've come to realize, so in recovery, there's this saying, attraction rather than promotion, mm-hmm. that you always want to attract people to have what you have and that you never promote it.
Okay.
That sounds good and it works for sobriety, but it doesn't necessarily work in business. Mm-hmm. You know, you need sales, you need marketing, you need to grow something. I functioned a lot in life where I would just kind of float around, and lately I've spent more time just kind of sitting still and envisioning what I want, mm-hmm. and the experiences that I want. And I think that is a helpful exercise to keep doing. And it's hard to do because, A, we don't like to sit still and envision. B, we're not taught to do this. And also, we don't know where we're going. And that's why it's great to go, gosh, this type of energy I'd really like in my creative projects. I'd mm-hmm. really enjoy working with someone where we create something and it feels amazing. And so I'd highly suggest that to you if you start, you know, in whether it be your meditation or your walks or your workouts, to start envisioning.
Okay.
And not just be in the daily. It's I never think the living in the future is never great, mm-hmm. but envisioning the energy around it, I think, is great.
Yeah, and I think you're right that I do need to do more of that and look at it in different aspects rather than just success. Because to me, that, like, almost like you're saying, like, I want to win an Oscar. To me, like, being like, I want to be, just feels arrogant and kind of self-indulgent.
Yeah.
But I do want to be really great at it. I do want to make money at it. I do want to make a lot of money at it. That'd be great because I enjoy it. So it'd be great to make money. And that's kind of why I'm glad that I still like training, because it's like, I make money at this thing that I enjoy doing. Like,
yeah.
I love it. Like, yeah. I don't. And they say, you know, what's the saying? If you do something that you love, you never work a day in your life. And it, like, there's days where I feel like that. I'm like, my day was just so
full.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I got to see a lot of great people, help them, you know, advise them and, you know, just have a good time.
Yeah, life's interesting whenever we try to do new things, what can come in. So I was sharing that I did this animation that I'm going to mm-hmm. put out. And literally I thought to myself, gosh, it'd be really nice to collaborate with an artist. And I ended up talking to this artist in Brazil, and I thought we were going to collaborate. And I got all excited because, you know, we could use his images for the next. And then he told me it was $12,000. I'm like, I'm not paying $12,000. And I thought this was a collaboration. But then a week later, I got a phone call about this. There's a show coming out, an animated TV show, and they wanted someone to come in and work their retreat. And what I was able to do was work into my deal, instead of them paying a full fee, is that I collaborate with them on some animations.
Look at that.
I have not had any animation companies hit me up to work with them and 18 years.
Right, right.
So I have to think that by putting this new energy out there and thinking and allowing it to happen, somehow attracted animation.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in it.
You know?
Absolutely. what you put out, you get back.
And then the next day, you think nothing happens for a reason. You know, it's like such a roller coaster.
And the process that you're now in, it all builds on itself.
Yeah.
You know, sitting down and writing that story that day one takes you to the idea like, oh, this could be a cool cartoon. Well, I don't know anything about cartoons. How do I find someone to do cartoons? I don't know. I'll just kind of work on it.
Right.
And then that happens and you go, okay, cool. Then you know, at some point you'll be like, what's the next episode?
Yeah.
And then, you know what I mean? And then your skill improves in that. And then the show gets better and better and better. And then you have this really quality, great product that you're putting out that all started with one idea.
Yeah.
Some story you wrote when you just sat down and decided to write something.
Yeah. And it's interesting because even the animation to put on social media, there's a part of me that goes, Mike, it's not A+, you know, set up and it's not funny. You know, it's kind of the serious animation. Like, are people just going to go, what's wrong with him? But then the other part of me is like, no, this is how you feel. And this is what
put
you
want to
do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'll show you the animation right after and get your 10 cents.
Sure. And at some point, if you want to make them more funny, I can collaborate with you.
Yeah, we can collaborate on
punch them up a little bit.
And, yeah.
And I have tons of friends that probably would be interested as
well. That could be pretty cool. Well, Mike, thanks for coming in and connecting with me. And everyone can follow you on social at Coach Quads.
Yep.
And if they're in the Los Angeles area or ever going to Los Angeles area, they can always come to one of your comedy shows.
Sure. Yeah.
And you post all about that. And
yeah, usually on the Coach Quads Instagram. And I have
it's Coach Quads.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Coach Quads. Well, thanks for having
me.
Yeah.
Love you.
Love you. Thanks.
All right. And thanks to everyone who's listening. Make sure to follow Coach Quads. Tell them what you thought of this conversation. You can check out what we were talking about in One Decision. So if you're kind of stuck needing to make more money in a service profession, then there's some tips and different ways to look at what you do for a living in One Decision, the first step to a better life. And helped Mike make probably over 20% more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just within an hour of us making one decision. So,
yeah.
Rate and review this podcast. Till next time, keep it magical.